is the Great Shalom Broadcast, proclaiming that God wants total well-being for all children. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to have a great time today. We're going to do critical thinking.
Okay, now for those of you who are really shocked because we're talking about critical thinking, you and your kids need it the most. Do not let your enemies do all the teaching about critical thinking and insert their philosophy into it. Yes? Oh, now you get it. All right. And Great Shalom Broadcast is not political. I am going to use some politics in the examples, but we're all going to act like ladies and gentlemen and not get our undies in a twist. Yes? Okay. You ready? This is important. Well, and yes, this is especially for those of you who have older children. But, you know, this is not completely irrelevant to those of you who have younger children. Have you ever noticed a four-year-old going, why, right? And really, my sitting around the dinner table at 10 and listening to my father pontificate did me a world of good. It made me a much better student. I could tell in college, boy, I had the advantage over many of my colleagues because my dad talked to me about all kinds of stuff, law and history and politics. And it wasn't like the Kennedy table where we had to recite, where we had to on off the cuff make an argument. No, well, but that might not have been such a bad idea. Anyway, because my dad and my mother used some critical thinking, I gained that. And then I had to gain some more as I competed in upper level college and graduate school. But I'm finding that my undergraduate students that come in, they're completely innocent of all this. And we had some of this in English, you know, trying to unpack marketing and propaganda and so forth. I had some of that in English class in high school. So many students are not getting it. This is vital for survival and success in our world today. You'll have a fun time. And I'm going to make a whole course of this. I started when I was a professor making some kind of work on it. But we're going to finish that. It's going to be at least 8 lessons. So it'll be suitable for homeschooling. We'll try to get some suggested projects so you can make it into a 16-week course if you want, but it'll have 8 lessons, 8 topics, and it'll be fun. We'll talk about that at the end of the cast. So, 4 red flags on how to spot inappropriate arguments. 4 red flags, how to spot inappropriate arguments. The first one is called ad hominem arguments. So somebody says, gives the argument, like, we need to do this. And the response is, no, you are a bad person. You see, that shifts. And it distracts from the main argument. Even if the argument about the person being a bad person is true, it still does not argue on topic. Yes? So, for instance, John Adams might say, we need to fund the Navy. And his opponent might say, oh, John Adams is a toothless old man. Well, it doesn't really matter the number of John Adams' teeth. That is not a relevant point to whether or not we need to fund the Navy. Yes? Do you get the idea?
An obvious one is the mayor saying, we need to look in our budget and see if we are doing the appropriate road repairs, and should we allocate the extra tax money toward building roads or building a new library. And the response is, no, you have been sleeping with the wrong woman. Okay? This might be an issue that you don't want your politician sleeping around, but this should not distract from the business at hand, that how are we going to allocate our budget? Okay? So it's 2 separate arguments. Okay? So we need to work on our security against terrorism, no, you are racist. This might be an ad hominem argument, right? If we need to work on the budget, no, you're racist. Okay. That might be, we could look into that. Is that charge really applicable? Maybe even a little more obvious. Okay. So you're telling your hubby, I think we need to do some saving and not spend quite so much money. And I wonder if we could make a budget. And he says, you have some psychological issues around money. Okay. So it's very tempting to switch the conversation and talk about that. But that doesn't address getting a budget made. And often these ad hominem arguments are completely ridiculous and not even related. But they seem to work. So
the more incendiary they are, the more distracting they are, and therefore the less they might be related. You find this in politics, of course.
Notice, and ask yourself, is this ad hominem, which means to the man? So instead of speaking to the issue, you talk about the person who's bringing it up. Okay, so, well, I think we need to increase our the number of young adult readers in our public library. Oh, you're just a black person. What? Oh, I think we have overspent our budget. Oh, you're just an old person. Actually, that actually happened at a school board meeting where I was watching, and we had a number of people who, yes, they were older or they wouldn't have had time to look into the budget, know the budget better than the school board members. And they said, you've overspent. There's no way, giving existing taxation, that you can pay for the bond issuances and the high interest rate we have. And you're going to need to increase taxation, even above the legal limit. We're going to have to apply to this. And the response from the school board is, oh, y'all are just old. What? Anyway, don't permit ad hominem arguments. Okay, there are other changing the subject. There are other methods of changing the subject. So if you really loved me, you would. When did you start thinking I didn't love you? Okay, so the first premise was an asking for something in a manipulative way. If you really loved me, you would buy me a Camaro. When did you start thinking I didn't love you? So in the first case, it wasn't clear what the topic was. Well, actually, it was the Camaro. So I'm not sure if that's changing the topic or calling an ambiguous premise, huh? Or we have too many poor people. We need to improve taxation, to increase taxation. Well, is this about the same topic? We have too many poor people. So what exactly do you mean we have too many poor people? Do you mean that too many people aren't finding work? So let's unpack that. If it's a not finding work, then maybe we need to ask why that is. Okay? We have too many poor people is an assertion. And if the second assertion is we need to redistribute income, well, I'm not sure those quite exactly match. I mean, it may or may not be true, right? But notice if we're still on the same topic. That's what I'm trying to teach you. And of course, all of these are theoretical, and often it matters what the facts are. But I'm just trying to help you notice the strategies. Okay, so the four red flags. First one was an ad hominem, when the topic changes to the person. Okay, the second one is not really being on the subject. So what is the subject? Then we could start talking. All right. Similar to that is changing toward emotion rather than using logic at all. So I think that today we need to maybe come in after lunch, and rather than go to the tourist attraction, because I think it's too hot for the girls. Oh, well, you just never care about me. See, it's using emotion. as opposed to logic. Notice when that happens. We need to better supply those servicemen that we send out into the battlefield. Oh, well, we need to support our troops and be patriotic. Okay. So are you saying then that I'm not patriotic if I am asking budgetary questions? Right? So sometimes the strategy is to call them back, but just notice when the conversation shifts from is there a budgetary need or not to patriotism, which is there to rile your emotion. Okay, switching to emotion and logic, that's the one, two, three. The fourth one is faulty definitions. And I see this so often. Faulty definitions. So you have an ambiguous term, and therefore you come to an unusual conclusion, but it's based on your ambiguous terms. You've switched definitions. I don't mean to be political here. You know, we're not political here on Great Shalom. All denominations and without politics. But this is just coming up. So this is just about arguing. So we need to be charitable. So therefore we need to increase our progressive taxation and tax the wealthy more. So there's an argument, but that suggests two lines of argument. One is, do we need to be charitable? And the second is it charitable to increase our progressive taxation? And then you could ask, well, is charity, do charitable programs and entitlement programs, do they work the same way? Is that the same thing? And so forth. So faulty definitions. Well, there's a lot more to say on that. And for that, then sign up to get a copy of this course. But that's a good start. If you notice those things, you will catch inappropriate arguments and sometimes much more inappropriate than I've come up with today. Okay. Now, four good strategies on how to argue your point well. First off, earn a hearing by listening yourself. Be sure you know what the other side's concerns are. Then you'll be able to construct a better argument and you'll get them to listen to you. Earn a hearing by listening. That's one. Two, summarize the other argument well. Seldom is this done. Usually a straw man is set up that's easy to knock down. You've mischaracterized their argument. You haven't understood their concern. You've made them look foolish. You will never succeed except in your own mind because they're not going to listen to you. They'll feel insulted. Okay. And other people will see. Three, bring in new evidence. Evidence is a good thing. Facts are good things. Counter with definitions before they can argue against you. Use definitions. Argue from definitions and you have a strong argument. There are your four good strategies. Okay, well, in the course, there'd be a lot of practice on arguing well. That's an important thing. I don't care if you're going to be an engineer. You're going to have to argue for one way of doing things to your boss. If you're going to be an entrepreneur, you're going to have to argue your case to your customers. If you are a pastor, you understand? Okay. And, of course, if you're a citizen. The one biggest secret to saving time and not being duped when someone is telling you something. How to discover if something is true. The one biggest advice is say these words. How do you know? How do you know? That's advice from Napoleon Hill, the first success trainer, I think, in the world in 1920. How do you know? Somebody comes up to you with a stock tip, hot stock tip, put your money here. How do you know I will make money? Somebody gives you a whole line of doctrine. How do you know that is so? Oh, because everybody knows. How do you know? Your doctor tells you some awful procedure. How do you know this is the right thing? Well, if it's doctor, he should give you the studies and the probabilities. If he doesn't know what a peer-reviewed journal is, get another doctor. If it's doctrine, should give you Bible. Yes, proof text. Yes, I love it. Somebody tried to make proof texting a bad thing. Yes, I did appreciate. Pastor last night said, if somebody's teaching something and I can't find a proof text for it, I just really don't care about it. And he was talking about something that has been really fashionable in our circle for decades. And I realized, oh my goodness, he's right. We also fell for this everybody knows business, which is wrong. Okay. All right. And if it's a stock tip, well, future performance will not always be like past performance, but past performance is something you might want to look at. And also you might want to look at if the person telling you is going to make money off of it. Okay. So how do you know? Biggest way to not be duped. Okay. Now let me give you three criteria for a good argument. Three criteria for a good argument. First off, are your terms defined? Do we all know what we're talking about? You will be amazed at the extent to which this is not true. Are your terms defined? Are they used consistently? Secondly, is the logic good? Good logic. Now, there are whole courses just taught on logic, but if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. But seldom do you get this kind of clear logic. You get A equals B, therefore D. You get it all the time. Is the logical conclusion confirmed by evidence? So we want logic, but ideally we would like some evidence too. What stands as evidence? Things you can count and measure that have been counted and measured correctly. Things you can count and measure that have been counted and measured correctly and reported. So let's dive in here as to what constitutes science and what constitutes proof. First off, a proof in a legal court, there's a different standard than in science. In a court of law, it's proven beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's one instance and a reasonable man, and many reasonable people think that this would be so. Proven beyond a reasonable doubt. There is no good alternative explanation. In science, it is, okay, let's see if we can unpack this. In scientific experiments, we do not prove our hypothesis. We find that the null hypothesis is highly unlikely to be true. So we're proving that statistically this could not be a fluke. That's what we're proving. Statistically, it could not be a fluke. And to stand as science, one test is not going to do it. First off, to be a good test, you have to have a high number of response so that you can have a bell curve. So if you've got a survey that's well written and you have 1,000 respondents and you see that the conclusion you're coming could not be a fluke within 2% likelihood, then you've got a good study, but you've only have one study. Only if you have repetition of those and that they're good enough to put in a peer review journal, then it stands as we know from science. Unfortunately, journalists do not understand science and report one study as if it were true. and sometimes report studies that have low ends or weren't done well. So it is not scientific at all when it's claimed to be science. And sometimes what we always knew and we think is science never was. And so it's very important that we unpack this. And people who are highly educated fall for this nonsense as well. But now you are properly educated, right? So what stands for evidence? And science, even the best science, is always open to discovering more. Okay, so those are the criteria for good arguments. Good, solid, and consistent definitions, good, solid, consistent logic, and good, solid evidence. Now, when you get the course, you'll have a lot of fun little puzzles so that you and your child, student, can identify logic flaws. But you could do this also, and I recommend, as you go through your everyday life. Look in the newspaper ads and point out the logic flaws. Listen to the television commercials. Check for the logic flaws. My parents did this with me, and I was immune in ways that apparently most people aren't from silly TV commercials. And I remember my parents saying this rent to own. This was a way to take advantage of poor people. Anyway, I learned so much by this. They thought they were doing critical thinking skills, and we did that and some other things. Get games that use these. Get some little books at the teacher supply store that work on these. When you're watching television and you hear dialogue and you hear people talking to each other, put that on pause and discuss this with your children and practice making arguments. Listen to a political speech and dissect it. Did he make a good argument? Then listen to the speech from the opposing candidate. Did he make a good argument? What would be your argument? Is there a way to add these things together, or is one without evidence and logic? What do you think? And get your teenagers involved. This will be invaluable. Yes, it will be good for his or her academics, but it will be vital for life so they don't get duped and they can be influential and successful at whatever they do. Okay, so this is a paper and pencil course with little lessons and, you know, a lecture portion written and exercises. And there will be 8 lessons and 8 more suggested higher level lessons. So if you have a high school student, you know, writing projects or movie evaluation or something of this nature, so that you can extend it to 16. At a lower level, you could use this with 5th or 6th grade student up at the upper level high school, depending on your student's aptitude and ability. I recommend that you go on to some more formal logic courses, but this will be an introduction to critical thinking, vital, before you hit things like social sciences. Okay? And please obtain this by sending a check to me at Sharon Sarles, S-A-R-L-E-S, at the Great Shalom Broadcast, P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, Texas, 78613. Oh, I gave you the address. I didn't tell you how much. Okay, so $15 for the material, and I will include this diskette for it. Now, some of you may not use checks anymore, and you wish that I would get an online payment method. Well, I did try that once, and it's just a lot of labor and possible confusion in a situation where I'm not making any profit. So I'm not saying that will never happen, but at this time we don't have that. So send me a check. for $15. If you do not have a check, but you have other payment methods, let me advertise to you that it is possible to go down to a bank or any other financial institution, even sometimes the corner store, the convenience store, and exchange whatever payment method you have for a cashier's check. So it is a piece of paper and addressed to me, Sharon Sarles, at the Great Shalom Broadcast. And send it land mail, P.O. Box 971, Cedar Park, Texas, 78630. And yes, that's not the best marketing. It would be better if it was what impulse buy and click here and everything. But you need, you know you need this. You know you want this. And yes, I could probably put it in on Amazon. So maybe that's what I'll do. But until that happens, and of course you won't get the audio disc with that. Okay. I might do that. But better to get it now. Okay. And give me a little chance to reply, because we're just a few monkeys here. Very few monkeys. Okay. All right. So, critical thinking. Bless you. Also, write me. Send me an email. Tell me what you're interested in. Send me your questions, your prayer requests at info@greatshalom.org. Of course, come to the website, talk on the blog at www.greatshalom.org. Love to hear from you. Have a happy summer. Hope you enjoyed your fourth. May you be blessed. May you and your children increase. And this is Sharon Sarles proclaiming that God wants total well-being for all children.
Thank you for joining us for the Great Shalom Broadcast with your host, Sharon Sarles. Sharon is an author, educator, minister, parent, and grandparent committed to sharing the understanding of God's love and desire that all children experience optimal well-being in this generation and the generations to come. The Great Shalom Broadcast is here to bring hope, health, and healing for children and youth by inspiring, informing, equipping parents and educators. For more information on today's program or today's offer, simply log on to thegreatshalom.org or email info@greatshalom.org.